Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lorecast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the vast universe of lore behind the Mass Effect games. We'll talk about all the details you may have missed, ask the hard questions, and more.
Spectres, welcome back to the Mass Effect Lorecast. This is your host, Tom, or Robots, and with me as usual, N7 Legend. But hey, N7, Sam, do you know what episode this is?
Yeah, this is episode number 50.
Number 50. Do you know how many weeks there are in a year?
I think there's something like 52.
52. So today, as we record this live, as is our new pattern here, tonight we were recording 50 and then 51, which will be released this week. Which is, because we had to miss a few over the last year, actually coincides with the wrapping up of a year since we launched this show. That's kind of nuts.
Yeah, I can't believe it. I actually can't believe that, like, it has already been a year. Like, and just to, like, let's look back at the history of Legends technological issues. a year ago, you know, I was recording this on my MacBook, my 2012 MacBook Pro.
Yes. And remember the weird delays we would get with the,
oh my God,
with the calls and then the MacBook, and then who knows what was causing that, but like you would say something and then I have to wait, and then there'd be these, yes, we had all the technological issues. We've solved so many of those. We've come such a long way. We're living in the future.
It's been a hell of a ride, Commander.
Yeah, man, the show is turning 1 year old. This is the last week before it officially turns one, and so we have what I guess is going to be the last two episodes, this one and the next one, before we kick off a new series of episodes. So what are we covering for these last two episodes?
Yeah, right. Big time of transformation. We could consider this episode an advent of the new era of the Mass Effect Lorecast. This is going to be a two-part episode. Yeah. So, and it's going to focus on the Citadel Council. So in the first part of this two-part episode, we're going to talk about the form of the Citadel Council. We're going to talk more about the format and from where they get their authority, how much sway they actually hold over the galaxy, just really like an overall basis, like an outside establishing shot of the Citadel Council. And then in the second part, we're going to get more into the nitty-gritty. We're going to talk more about the specific decisions that they've made, the specific laws they've enacted that have made these huge ramifications in the galaxy, and just who the counselors are. But as you mentioned, we are transitioning from the factions episodes toward the individual ones. So the Citadel Council is kind of a great in-between. It's a great bridge.
Right. And by individual ones, you mean individual characters.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So I don't know how many comments you've read, but I've read a ton that have been like, oh, you got to cover Garrus. You got to cover Anderson. You got to cover so-and-so.
I mean, personally, I was thinking we were just going to skip Garrus. We just do everybody but Garrus, because I'm sure everybody would be okay with that. He's not a fan favorite or anything.
Yeah, nothing like that. I don't think half the internet would want our heads or anything.
We're like,
that.
What the? What are you doing? We're like, yeah, we just decided no Garrus on this show.
Yeah, something like that. I think we might even like be invoking the wrath of the internet just joking about that.
Yeah, I think two girls would just come over and murder us in our sleep.
No, probably awake. We need to be awake to experience the terror.
I mean, they would just kill us straight up Garrus Batman style. That's probably more like it.
Where's he? Where's Garrus?
Bring me my favorite. Bring him now. I will gut you.
Whoa, I didn't realize you ladies could talk in that low, deep voice. That's very, very scary coming out of those faces. So why don't we kick this off? Let's get into it.
Yeah. So, yeah, like I said, the factions, we're not quite done yet, but this is about it. I guess to go over the Citadel Council, we got to go over the basics first. So let's go back. Let's go back about 2,000 years, 2,000 plus years to be exact, to 500 BC. This is when the Asari find the Citadel around that time. And then the Salarians find the Citadel. Both of them find the Citadel independently of each other. But when they meet at the Citadel, the Asari suggest forming a cross-governmental cooperative body.
That's nice of them.
Could be like this new, you know, I imagine it was probably like there had to have been like some conspiracy theories about new world orders and things like that at the time, because you're coordinating a new government with a new alien race that you just met.
Yeah, I'm sure there were some people to quell on both sides of the equation.
Yeah, you know, that's speculation, but I'm sure that there was. Anyway, the founding of this the council is this momentous occasion. It's incredibly, incredibly like huge. And I think even at the time they know that. And they found this Citadel Council on the Citadel as this new galactic order. Because, and it is thanks to the Citadel's position as it's a local, it's a central hub for all the mass relays, for the entire mass relay network. Mm-hmm. And then because of that, the Citadel becomes this galactic capital of politics, trade, later becomes the center of entertainment and media and culture, things like that. You could call it the Carthage of its futuristic setting.
Rome. I mean, all roads, you know.
All roads lead to Rome. All relays lead to the Citadel.
Yeah.
That might be a very apt comparison. And this shaping of the Citadel under the guide of the Citadel Council, the shaping of the Citadel as this hub, it sets up so many power dynamics in this series. It sets up all of these exploratory events, wars, struggles, you know, all of the events that we basically know from Mass Effect all come back to this. Because without the Citadel Council purposefully making the Citadel the galactic hub, you wouldn't have so many of these stories. You probably wouldn't even have the story of Zaid and Vito Santiago. You wouldn't have the story of Garrus being so, you know, discouraged with the law and then going to Omega and becoming this vigilante. You wouldn't have those stories. So right. its impact cannot be understated.
To jump in here, I have to wonder if you would even have nearly the level of cooperation inter-race wise at all. Without a central hub like this to coordinate that.
Right. It facilitates the development and it arranges like the necessary infrastructure for the growth of the Milky Way's species. And it does this for like millennia.
Mm-hmm. Without something like this, you would have needed the creation of a place like this for everybody to gather in. And that would have taken a lot longer for them to build themselves. But the fact that it was already there for them to use meant that it furthered it along a lot faster.
Right. Convenient, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's exactly and we know this from what Sovereign tells us in the end of Mass Effect 1, it is exactly what the Reapers intended. You know, the Protheans, they did the same thing after gaining space flight from the Inusanan, off of the Inusanan's technology and relics and ruins. So the Protheans also stood on the shoulders of giants.
Right.
And then they found the Citadel.
It's like being little rats in a maze. And the rats are like different rats has all started on different sides of the maze, but then they were all kind of guided right to the center of the maze. And they were like, oh, look, this maze conveniently moves us all right to the middle. And there's this thing right in the middle that we can all share. This is nice.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's like the thing was just laid here by something before us. I wonder if there's a reason. Oh, well.
Despite my lack of phalanges, I am still just an alien in the Reaper's cage.
Oh, God. I wonder how many people are going to get that. That's like a two-layer joke.
I stayed up all night thinking about that one.
Yeah.
So, you know, and like I said, we cannot understate the impact of them forming this council as this central hub. And they, like, I think just a little thing nominally, or like when you look at it, it's probably just two lines of text in the lore, but it has such massive implications, is that the galaxy rewrites their calendars around this event. Like, they have new calendars called the Galactic Standard Calendar, and now year zero marks the founding of the Citadel Council. Not when the Asari found the Citadel, but the creation of the council.
Do the years is a year based on a revolution of the Citadel?
That's actually interesting that you should bring that up, about time, because they have an explanation in the lore about how they calculated the time.
Yeah, because, I mean, and you'd have to standardize that as well.
It is. It's a mathematical standardization, and we will actually get to that in the next episode. But I promise that there is an explanation, and us humans might be interested to hear about it. But it's viewed some of an advent of a new era, the creation of this Citadel Council, because it's this new era of what I imagine the Asari are hoping is a utopic type of cooperation, an era of, you know, cross species coordination. And given that the Salarians are not outwardly hostile, it probably seems pretty doable.
Of course. I mean, it's all going to work out perfectly. I don't see any reason why it would fall apart.
There are reasons. And what? The council may have precipitated some of them. But each of the council species has general characteristics typical of what we've learned about their cultures by the time the player character meets them in Mass Effect 1. And in my opinion, they serve as a representative for what we should think of each of the races in the beginning. And notice I said that the council was founded by the Asari and the Salarians. It wasn't until later that the Turians came in, and we kind of discussed this in a previous episode, but we'll get to that in a little bit. By the beginning of Mass Effect 1, it's the Salarians, the Asari, and the Turians on the council. And the Asari very clearly are supposed to be level-headed diplomats and mediators. The Salarians, very shadowy, even from their hooded, you know, the Dalatras' hooded appearance, gathering intelligence and information, very cautious, never want to act before the intelligence has a chance to confirm something. And the Turians are brutish. I don't want to say brutish like Krogan, but brutish as in stern, rigid, military peacekeeping forces.
Right. Not brutish as in dull and dim-witted.
Right. Brutish as in disciplined and militaristic.
Right.
And so each of these races on the council, their counselors represent the associated characteristics with that race, I think. That was probably just a gameplay mechanic, in my opinion, and they fleshed it out a little bit later. But because if you remember, the first aliens that we have to really put a name with a face, some of the first are the Citadel Council.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's an easy way to kind of designate and remember groups.
It is.
It's easy, you know, buckets to fill.
Yeah. And so basically when we back up and now we look at it from what is the council by the end or by the beginning of Mass Effect 1, by the very first Mass Effect, we can conclude that they are this overarching government in the Milky Way.
And with the whole galaxy, like, I mean, we're still only talking about three of the races here. Like, they've decided that they're the ones running it at this point, right?
That's yes. Yes, but also no. So it's the question of jurisdiction is a very applicable one, because for all intents and purposes, the Citadel Council is the head honcho in the galaxy. There's no single entity that's greater besides the Reapers that could really challenge them. I suppose if the pirate bands and the gangs in the Terminus systems all banded together under one banner, but the council has covert operations that are actively dispelling such a thing, and that's messy. We can get into that a little bit later. But the point is, their authority has limits. Their authority has limits, and even the council cannot control those places at the fringes of Citadel space, like the Terminus systems. And so Citadel space is the term that Mass Effect uses to designate the bounds of council authority, the geographical bounds. And yet it's a very loosely defined term. So I did my research to try to see if I can define this as best for us as I can. And it's interestingly not what you would think. When you think of Citadel space, you probably are envisioning a map of the Milky Way and then trying to draw like a straight line border around what the Citadel Council controls.
Kind of like a glob, like a bubble, like an amoeba shape, you know, like a three-dimensional amoeba around like a three-dimensional model of the, you know what I'm saying? Like, have you ever seen one of those star maps, like for like Star Wars or something, where they're like, this is the part the Empire was like, blah, 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 and this is the outer rim over here, you know, like that kind of thing.
That is what you would think. And yet it's even more abstract than that, because there are no official Citadel Council borders. Instead, the lore tells us that the quote unofficial term referring to any region of space controlled by a species that acknowledges the authority of the Citadel Council. But you remember how I said yes and no? Let's keep in mind that the galaxy is huge, even with faster than light starship technology. And according to the codex says, quote, at first glance, it appears this territory, Citadel space, encompasses most of the galaxy. But in reality, however, less than 1% of those star systems have been explored. So it's it's a lot of empty space that no one really knows what's going on in. This makes sense.
Yeah.
Because there aren't really any rest stops or gas stations to pull off along the highway. And the highway is even a bad metaphor because mass relays are point to point. They're not this path that you can travel along. It's just a point to point teleportation thing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. When you think about the sheer scale of the size of the galaxy and the number of mass relays they would need to have, you would need one at every star.
Yeah.
Like, yep. you would just, in order to actually explore all of space in an actual standard amount of time that would be, you know, good for any regular race to be able to do within a few lifetimes, like, you would need a mass relay on every single star.
Right. And the distance between some mass relays is so massive that even with FTL tech, it would take like way too long to travel that conventionally.
Yeah.
So who the hell knows what's at the byway point?
Right.
You know, the bisector.
Yeah. There could be hundreds of thousands of other races out there that most of these races have never even heard of, will never even engage with within, you know, regular lifespans.
And yet the Citadel Council, a body that these races may have never heard of, lay claim to that territory.
Yeah, right, right.
And
yeah.
So it's this very loosely defined thing where, you know, it refers to any region of space controlled by a species that acknowledges the authority of the Citadel Council.
Sure.
It's very it's vague, and it leaves a lot of room for, geographical contests.
Yeah.
And it's also worth noting that with the mass relays, the user being the pilots, they stay within the confines of pre-programmed destinations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they're only ever going places the Reapers want them to go.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It would take a very long time to get to the point where they could explore all that other empty space. Okay, so now that we know the limits of the Council's reach based on the size of the galaxy and all that, what about them as like a body? How many members do they have and who's represented?
So the Council is made up of one counselor from each council race. And like I said at the beginning of Mass Effect 1, that's one Asari, one Salarian, and one Turian. And so we have a multi-headed governmental body. They are all co-rulers in this head, which is a form of government that we call diarchies. Are there any real world examples that come to your mind, like about diarchies?
The Roman triumvirate would be a yes. type of diarchy. They're not typical because they're very hard to manage. Something like the split of power among the executive branch, the legislative branch, the judicial branch is kind of like that without a specific head of individual branches. So like the executive branch is the only one that actually has a figurehead of the branch, whereas even though the legislative branch has like a leader of the House and a leader of the Senate, it doesn't mean that those people are the individual leaders of those groups. The group still has to vote as a whole. So it technically doesn't fall under the same kind of diarchy system, but you still have a division of power across three branches. Sorry.
There are myths too, and other stories that we've heard in the current conversation, cultural conversation about brother kings or two people that would try to share a kingdom with equal authority, and it almost never works out.
No, it's pretty tricky. You know, even with three groups, all you have to have is two people make a deal with each other, and then they always outvote the third. You know, it's a tricky system.
Right. So it is somewhat remarkable that the Asari and the Turians haven't tried to edge out the Salarians or vice versa and any combination of the three. Mm-hmm. And initially, like I said, it is just the Asari and Salarians. And then as a result of the Krogan rebellions, the Turians are invited as the bulk of peacekeeping forces. So they're like, you know, the enforcers, the Turians, and that's why they're invited on. And then after Sovereign, Saren, and the Geth launch this massive assault on the Citadel in Mass Effect 1, humanity is invited too, depending on Shepard's choice. Mm-hmm. And then everyone else, nada, no, nothing.
So. Yeah, that's, I mean, it is crazy to think that humanity made it like that far, being that they were so new. So I remember our conversations about the Volus becoming a client race of the Turians. Remember that? And some of the aliens being resentful of humanity getting a seat at the table because they joined so quickly after discovering, you know, the Citadel and all of that. So what does all that mean for the Council as a whole?
Who the Council lets in and who they don't has massive implications for the entire series in terms of legislative representation, legitimacy and authority, interpersonal politics. I mean, you name it. This is a not a great system that they have to make everyone feel included. And although some people might scoff and laugh at that, oh, you know, who cares if others feel included or not? It turns out when you are trying to govern a population of people and they don't feel like they have a say in the future, they can get kind of pissed off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not a great recipe for stability. And tons of things happen that threaten the stability of the, established galactic order in Mass Effect, but that is another can of worms, so we can probably hop into the mid-break first.
All right, so we'll hold on to that. We'll get back to that after we thank our patrons, so we'll be right back.
Message coming in. Patching it through.
I am sovereign, and this station is mine. I like the sound of that.
All right, so here we are in the middle of the show, and we get to thank our new patron, Becky, for signing up. Becky, thanks for joining the Patreon, and thank you to all of our patrons. We currently have 46 patrons supporting the show. Thank you to every single one of you guys, and a big, big thank you to our Tier 5 Shepherd level patrons, Hool the Fool, Apollo, and Pipe Man. Thank you to the three of you, and especially just all of you. I mean, I can't go through everybody's names every show, but I would if I could. The shows would be a lot longer, but thank you to everybody. And if we've done anything to help you get through your work day, your commute to work, your workout, or cleaning up the dog poop all over your floor, because while you were on a Zoom work call today, the dog decided to try to take a poo, and the poo stuck to the dog's furry butt, and then the dog decided to come into the office and rub its butt all over the floor, and then you had to cut your work meeting short in order to clean up the dog's butt and also the poo all over the floor, then go to patreon.com/MassEffectLoreCast, where you can check out all the different tiers and you can get things like ad-free episodes or, you know, t-shirts, or join us on future episodes of the show. All sorts of things that are way more enjoyable than cleaning up dog poop. So thanks again to all of our patrons. And please, if you get the time or you just have the opportunity, please tell your friends about the show if they enjoy Mass Effect, and take the opportunity to also leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. That's it for the midbreak for today, unless you have something else you want to throw in there, Sam.
Well, I checked again today, and we finally passed the 200 rating mark.
Yes!
On Spotify.
Yes.
And we're still at 4.9 stars, so I feel pretty amazing about that.
Yeah, thank you guys. That's awesome. Thank you to everybody who takes time to do that. That really does help move us up the rankings, because that stuff does matter, especially on Spotify now. The getting the average up and getting the number of reviews up moves us up in search results. So thank you so much for that. All right, let's move on with the rest of the show.
Spit it out, or are you trying to build suspense?
You're so dense, sir. Obviously, I do not know as much about human relationships as I thought.
So we're talking about membership to the council and how that doesn't seem to be particularly even for every race. More thoughts on that?
Yeah, like what's that Orwell quote about from Animal Farm? Not all animals are created equal, or mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah.
Sorry, I got to brush up on my Orwell, I guess.
Yeah, it's been a little while.
At any rate, it's exclusive. And so any species who is granted an embassy on the Citadel is considered what they call an associate member. Mm-hmm. So they're not a council race, but they are an associate member.
It's like a tier one patron, but they didn't pay for the upgrade.
We should rename them associate
that's
members.
That's our associate member status.
Yes. And then there's a Hanar tier, there's an Elcor tier, there's a Volus tier. I would feel wrong putting the Hanar below or above the Elcor.
I mean, the Volus are clearly higher than both of them, right?
Oh, superior in all ways.
That's our top tier now, the Volus tier.
Now I'm thinking we should rename tier 6 to Volus.
Volus.
Danny DeVolus.
Danny DeVolus tier. Yep.
Yes.
And there's only one. Only one. Once that's taken, nobody else can take it.
There is only one Danny DeVolus.
Yeah. You become Danny DeVolus if you sign up for tier 6.
We'll ship you a rebreather. I'm kidding. We don't really have the funds for that.
I mean, if you sign up for tier 6, we might.
Yeah, that's true. Regardless, the associate members of the council, they can bring up issues, like they can redress their grievances to the council, the counselors, but it doesn't mean that they're going to have any input on the issues when they are decided upon. So basically, they can just be like, "Excuse me, sir, this is going on." Yeah.
Tap, tap, tap. Tap, tap, tap. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but then they're like, okay, cool, thanks. And then the counselors can decide whether to even address it or not. Mm-hmm. And so that begs the question, who are associate members? Well, we already listed a couple of them. The Volus, Elcor, Hanar, and Drill are all considered associate members. They have embassies on the Citadel, but they're not council races.
Yeah. You know what it is? I think people just, they just don't find them as attractive, unfortunately.
Speak for yourself. That elephant manatee hybrid race that speaks in complete monotonous sentences.
I mean, I'm not saying I don't find them as attractive. I'm just saying, you know, the interstellar TikTok people groups.
Where are we going with this?
They don't trend. They don't trend as much on there. It's all the hot Turian picks. Those are the ones that get the most.
It's a conspiracy from the deep state. Views.
Yeah.
Yeah. I demand equal representation for the Elcor. But
I mean, if you haven't checked out some of the hot Hanar stuff.
Oh, no. There's got to be. There's got to be. I don't really want to dive into that. No pun intended. I'm sure there is.
Not safe for works. I'm just talking like models, you know, like the really good looking people doing awesome stuff on vacation locations, you know,
right? In like Fornax.
Like, you know, partying it up with models and suits and race cars, you know, that living the life, that kind of stuff.
Well, there is Blasto.
There's Blasto.
Blasto is a celebrity. But, you know, if you think the Volus, Elcor, Hanar, and Drell have it rough, then you should see who are not associate members. That includes the Corians. The Corians were actually stripped of their embassy, meaning that they were stripped of their associate member status because they had created the Geth. They had created a true AI and broken. They had flagrantly broken intergalactic law forbidding artificial intelligence.
That's kind of a big no-no.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. As we've discussed in previous episodes, that's a recipe for disaster. And the Citadel Council was not happy about that. And another race that is not an associate member anymore are the Krogan. Krogan were stripped of that privilege after the rebellions, and we'll get into a little bit more about the rebellions and how the council had their hands in that. Mm-hmm. The other race who are not associate members are the Batarians, but it's a different scenario here because the Batarians willfully left. So they forfeit their embassy because after this human colonization conflict in the Skellion Verge, and then the council ultimately ruled along the side of humanity, saying that humanity had the right to colonize where they were. After that conflict, the Batarians were like, oh, okay, I see. You're going to take humanity's side. Mm-hmm. Okay, well then, you know, up yours. We're going to withdraw. We're going to become a complete isolationist rogue state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but how would they have said it, though?
Probably in a deep, muffled voice.
Yeah, and what would that sound like?
Like this.
Okay, so say it again.
Up yours. We are withdrawing.
Okay, that's better.
Yeah.
That's
better. I got to work on my Batarian impression. Yeah.
No, that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Maybe I can find some voice modulators, but they resort to becoming a complete rogue state, the Batarians do, and not every Batarian, but the Batarian government. And what does this mean for the races who are not, you know, the Batarians, I would say the Vorcha, but the Vorcha don't really seem capable of organizing beyond anything except for tribes and mm-hmm. loose tribes at that. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure that the Vorcha are even interested in having an embassy. And even if they were, I don't think that's a realistic possibility.
No, no, it doesn't seem like it.
They're regenerative space worms that can talk.
Yeah. I don't think they're really interested in communicating with anyone else on much of a much of a level of anything, really.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Run. Yeah, yeah.
Would you like to have an embassy on the council? You have to sign these papers.
No. Let's discuss intergalactic economics at length.
Can you imagine, like, a Vorcha econ professor?
Yeah, yeah.
I want to learn more about your history and culture. No!
Ooh, okay, all right.
Listen, we cannot print more money. That's going to flood the economy. It's going to send inflation through the roof.
Solid point! I totally agree!
Okay, great.
More gold coins!
He aggressively agrees with me. Wonderful.
Vorcha economists, the world's top experts. I think they'd probably be more Keynesian. That's a topic for a different podcast.
The Vorcha economics podcast. That is a very specific niche.
Very niche. But yeah, that's probably why they're not included on the conversations. And the other people who are not included on the conversations who we just mentioned, the Quarians, the Krogan, the Batarians. So what does this mean for them? Well, it means that they're not considered in any of the binding resolutions. It means they're not considered in any of the laws or research and development, the resolutions, the executive orders. There's no representation for them in the council's, not just on the council, but in the council's consideration. Like, they're not on any type of political standing, so they don't really have even a method of redressing grievances that apply to them with the council. They don't have an in whatsoever.
Yeah. So you've mentioned the legislative side, the lawmaking side, a couple of times so far. So why is that important, and how much power does the council actually have in regards to that?
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, about jurisdiction, supremacy, legislative priorities, that kind of thing. The council actually has very, very little legitimate power, if any, over all of the individual species governments. So the Turian hierarchy, Salarian Union, the Asari, the humanity. The council doesn't have supreme authority over them. Like, say, the United States federal government has supreme authority over a state government.
Right. So it's more of like a confederacy.
Right. Kind of. And it gets very messy. So, but what does this mean? Well, according to the Codex, the quote, the council's decisions carry great weight throughout the galaxy, though. So no single council race is strong enough to defy the other two, meaning Asari versus Turian Salarian or Salarian versus the others. Right. And all of them have a vested interest in compromise and cooperation. I'm guessing the Codex is just referencing those three because those are the three lawmaking races.
Mm-hmm. Right. So they can't, none of them can strong hand any of the others, basically.
Right.
Solo-y. But solo-y. I just said solo-y, like by themselves. So then what authority do they actually have?
Yeah, this part is like really messy. So, I mean, I need everyone to bear with me for a second.
All right, hold on.
One. Hold on to your diapers, babies. We're getting
Hold on to your butts.
We're getting into authority and legitimacy in government. They cannot override any one species government, the council. But the individual governments can't really stand to go against everyone else. So there's a lot of room for legislative gridlock here. What happens if one of the individual governments passes a law that the council doesn't necessarily agree with? Do they have to strike it? Is it just like kind of an honor system thing? I have a lot of questions here. Probably the universe was set up this way by the writers because it lends more space for interesting stories. Mm-hmm. If everything was very clear-cut protocol and there were no conflicts, that's pretty boring.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also not realistic.
Right.
I mean,
very not realistic.
Think about any time you've had a group of nations try to cooperate in any specific way. It never goes that simply. you know, some nations cooperate well, but not all nations. Like,
and the other thing is, do you really think that they'd get any of the alien races on board onto like signing on to this whole idea of the Citadel space if they had to willfully relinquish sovereignty over their own people?
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, like, nobody's going to do that.
Definitely not. There would be massive protests, revolutions, like hell no.
Right.
And especially not considering the Asari are supposed to be the pillar of democracy, right? They have this synthetic democracy going on. That's one of the reasons why it's messy. Number two, this is an authority that we know that they do have. They have a treaty making authority. They can prepare treatises. And they act as mediators in conflicts. These don't always have to be active firing at each other conflicts. Sometimes they're colonization feuds, like we mentioned with the humanity and the Batarians. And then other times they're direct confrontations, like the first contact war between Turians and humanity. And the Council in both instances tried to act as a mediator and resolve the differences. Turians in the latter were ultimately ordered to pay reparations for their force against and their occupation against Shanxi, because if we remember the human colony of Shanxi, the Turians were wiping out entire city blocks from orbit just to take out single strike teams of Marines. And yet, there's this clear-cut conflict mediation authority that they have, because who else could fill that role? But there's also the Council passing binding resolutions, laws, and treaties that all species who wish to be included in the Galactic Society must abide by. So it's very, very specific now. We're getting very into like the weeds, like these are overarching laws that are binding and everyone has to agree to them. And we can get into the specifics next episode. But the point is that the Council does have this power. They've proven it over and over and over again. And they have this power to pass laws that require, like, it's not an option. They require the adherence across different species governments.
Right. And if they refuse?
Well, a couple of different things can happen. One, if they refuse in a very belligerent way, I suppose they could face direct military engagement. Just ask the Krogans. They refused to abide by a council order to withdraw from Lucia, an Asari colony, because the Krogan were attempting to colonize what was already colonized. And thus, the Spectres, one of the enforcement branches of the Citadel Council, they decided to strike at the Krogans, and that launched the Krogan rebellions. So there is a repercussion if you don't abide by some of these things. There's and the Spectres and the STG are kind of macro inter-world level repercussions that they can use on ne'er-do-wells and also people that just don't recognize their authority within what Citadel space is considered. There's also CSEC on a micro level, micro local policing level. But the other thing that can happen is something that happened to the Batarians. Ultimately, the Batarians kind of did it to themselves, but it's not like the Council is sending diplomatic corps out there and constantly trying to get them to open up. There's a big problem here where you can, and they've done it to the Quarians, the Council can effectively exclude them from the galactic economy, the galactic culture sphere, the media, you name it. And this is weirdly relevant today.
It really is. Yeah.
Today on March 14th, 2022, I think there was a huge misconception for a long time. Like, oh, OK, well, you can exclude us from the economy. But what does that matter?
Right. Right. But yeah, in a everybody's connected now global economy, that really does freaking matter. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, we're seeing the proof of that in just like the last 3 weeks with the Russian conflict, that that just shows the power of corporations now. I mean, for better or worse, that just shows the power
of
corporations and world banking. Like, together, all of these corporations have decided, well, we don't like what Russia is doing. So we're going to pull out, or we're just going to cut off business. And if enough of them do it, then the money is now worthless.
Yeah.
Boom.
And
done.
So when you get excluded, not just from corporations, but from other states as well. And when I say state, I mean like the state, like the concept of government.
Right.
When you get excluded from other governments like that, you know, and you've been ostracized, and so much of your economy is reliant on being a part of the outside world. And not just that, but like there's a psychic toll, I think, as well. Mm-hmm. And when you're excluded to that degree, I think herein lies the real power of the Citadel. And I think the Asari know this intrinsically.
Yeah.
And the Asari are not afraid to wield it.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, look at what has happened to the Quarians. Yeah. I mean, they've been ostracized. They've been kicked off their home planet by the Geth. But, and not only are they nomadic, but they don't have really anywhere to go in Citadel space because the Council hasn't allocated them a world.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is amazing because so much of what we see in Mass Effect is written based on historical precedents. And we talk about this all the time. You know, like this is an example from ancient Rome. This is an example from the history of Chinese Empire or whatever, right? Like, but this right here, this idea that the Council can wield power due to financial and culture and media and these kinds of things, we haven't seen that play out until right now. And the fact that this was written over a decade ago, like they predicted this in the storyline. Yeah. Like that's really freaking cool. They're like, no, in a system that's this integrated where all of these races, cultures, peoples have to work together and all of their economies are tied together, then if you ostracize one of those economies, one of those groups in all of these ways, it will have a toll that is a legitimate threat to those people. And so, yes, that is something that you can wield against them if they do not comply. You don't have to wield military might. You can wield these other things.
This is applicable in our world, and we don't even have a one world currency yet.
Right, right. But we don't need one. Because our currencies are so tied together at this point.
Right, but Mass Effect does.
Yeah.
In Citadel space, there is a one galactic currency. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the next episode. But before we go on, there's also, you know, we've talked about the executive branch with the Spectres and the military engagement. We've talked about a legislative branch responsibility that the Council apparently has. But the judiciary is really, really confusing for me. And this is a conversation that I've had with actually one of our patrons, Psyche. So Psyche runs a tabletop RPG podcast, and it's about CSEC. So Psyche reached out to me and asked me, hey, what do you think about the judiciary system in Mass Effect and in Citadel space? And I struggled to find an answer because if we're being honest, like, we don't really know a lot. I looked up, you know, what I could find about the judiciary. And from what I see, it looks like there are trials that are held where people are judged by trials of their peers. Whether or not that's purely for criminal purposes or not, whether or not people are extradited from the Citadel to their home world or to their own government's jurisdictions, I'm not sure. What happens if someone's born on the Citadel? Do they become a citizen of Citadel space? Do they have like a Citadel black passport?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There are a lot of different, things that can happen like that. And so Psyche and I had a pretty good conversation about that. And I'm sure he's going to tie a lot of that into his Blue Shift podcast. And from what I can tell about the Citadel Council having a hand in the judiciary, I don't know if there's enough in lore to definitively state any extent of that.
Yeah. That's a good question. So so we'll go into more of this stuff on the next episode. That wraps up this episode. Man, this is some really interesting stuff. And again, I think it's really cool that they saw the writing on the wall in our own system to be like, okay, if you extrapolate this out to an intergalactic system, then this would be kind of the way you could kind of play stuff out. So.
Yeah, you could call Drew Karpyshyn a prophet, I guess.
I guess so. pretty cool. Well, you got anything else you want to share before we head out?
Yeah, you know, as always, I am streaming every Saturday, Monday, and Thursday. Had to skip today to actually focus on this episode, but I am going to be streaming, you know, back on Mondays again. If you'd like to catch one of my Mass Effect streams on the weekends or some of my other streams, then find me on Twitch at N7TheLegend or on Twitter at N7TheLegend.
Awesome. My streams are all on the Robots Radio channel, so Twitch at twitch.tv/robotsradio or youtube.com/c/robotsradio. That's where this show is streamed on Monday nights now, starting at 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific. I just recently launched the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. The third episode went up today. We're talking about the Valar, all of the Vala, that's singular. And they're the powers that created the world and all that stuff. Very cool stuff. I love the Lord of the Rings and Middle Earth lore, all of that. So if you're into that, then go check that out on whatever podcatcher you're listening to this on. And in the spirit of Lord of the Rings, this is funny, Sam. I decided to log back in because I never really gave it a fair shake to Lord of the Rings Online, which came out in 2007. And has barely been updated since then. I mean, they keep on creating more content for it because it's still like a live game with like a very small but like really, really dedicated fan base. And I created, and I might stream this. I might stream at just random times at this point. Who knows? But I created a hobbit and I noticed all the different hairstyles. And one of the hairstyles had like really swoopy hair like this. And I named him Emo. Emo the Hobbit. Oh my god, it's like playing World of Warcraft, the game, like original, not like updated World of Warcraft with better graphics and all of the stuff that they've been continually updating World of Warcraft, like not 2022 World of Warcraft. This is like playing 2007 World of Warcraft. This game looks so freaking old. But oh my god, it's a trip. Anyway, I might have to stream it so you guys can see what it looks like.
Quite the throwback, and I thought for sure that you were going to say that you created an orc. And while we're while we're on the topic of throwbacks and orcs, I am actually on Thursdays. I'm streaming Morrowind, and I made this character. It's an orc. His name's Turd Ferguson.
Nice.
And
nice.
His class is a turdmonger. And the whole headcanon that I've wrapped up for this guy is that he hides in the bushes, waiting for enemies. And then when enemies stroll by, he's not particularly like skilled in combat, but he'll jump out of the bushes covered in feces, screaming. Mm-hmm. And naturally, that will be enough to normally scare off enemies. And for the ones who aren't, he has a pointy spear, and he's also quite adept at summoning scamp armies. So
that's very, very threatening. So yeah, I might play him at some point on the stream, but we'll see. But yeah, that's what I got going on. Everything you can, all of my shows, all of the shows on the network, everything can be found at robotsradio.net. And that's what we got going on. But we'll be back in just a minute if you're in the live stream to record the next episode. And if you are waiting for that on the podcast feed, it'll be up in just a few days later on this week. So we'll be back. Thanks for being here. And until next time, I just follow the rules if you're part of Citadel government, because otherwise, who knows? They might lay the smack down and then make fun of you on their social media, because I guess they can do that. All right. See you guys next time. Later.
Thanks for tuning in to the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast, or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health, or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.